said talk to me, damn it, or else I'm gonna throw you in the fire!
You stupid bitch, you filthy!
Welcome to Flyover State of Fear. I got my man Brian. I'm Joe. How is everyone doing? How are you doing, Brian? It's
I'm so glad to be here, man. Yeah. Thank you for not using your vague dream powers to turn me into a frat boy and let me come here as my genuine self to enjoy talking butterfly effect. But let's not get too ahead of ourselves.
I do want to give a start of the episode disclaimer for butterfly effect. There's the two sentences in this. One, Ashton Kutcher's a piece of shit. That is just a bottom line. I will not retroactively say that. I pre-prevent. So it was like, he's kind of funny, but we'll talk about that later. The other thing is, because of the contents fully of Butterfly Effect, our laughter and humor are not for the actual acts they are doing in this movie. It's the stupidity of the fucking...
honestly, content warning.
No. There's a lot of. There's just gonna be a lot of
child abuse. Ableism.
There's too many things in that movie.
So many. Just as all the content warning.
Just save it. You know, to be like, keep going. Well, that it's all bad.
Don't condone them.
Yes, but a lot of it is hysterical. Anyway, I just want to give that general ness for both of ourselves. Before we talk about this, is just a trigger warning because it's
absolutely
so.
Anytime you're talking about a movie from the early 2000s, you should just give a trigger warning in general. It's like, hey, this movie came out before 2007, so just like keep that in mind.
So, before we really dive in to this butterfly effect and our wings ripple through and. You know, maybe Yusuf will pull an unnecessary quote that has no ties into the actual movie before this episode.
Oh, man, that is my first note. I love the quote. It explains the butterfly effect. And then the quote is attributed to chaos theory. Not a person. Just the general idea of chaos theory.
And, yeah.
You could have done Dr. Ian Malcolm and even. Like, just do, like, what the hell?
The definition.
We're not going to do the top of the show. We're just going to talk about the movie. If we don't start and do our general top of the show stuff, we're not going to do it.
Okay. have you been watching anything?
You know, Joe, I have, in fact. Totally unprepared for this.
Yeah.
No, my wife. Got us on a little bit of a Betty Davis kick, so I've been like hitting up some classic horror thrillers. You know, horror meant a different thing in the 1960s, but still like some creepy stuff, some cool movies, some classics. I did watch Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, and then I followed it up with Hush Hush Sweet Charlotte, which is one I had never heard of.
I've only watched Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. Yeah, I mean, I'm a pretty blind to, you know, pre-1970.
Hush Hush Sweet Charlotte was a fun one. It also had Olivia de Havilland in it. And a very young Bruce Dern gets decapitated.
Ooh.
So, and that's not a spoiler. It happens very
early. Bruce Dern from Pete's Christmas?
Bruce Dern from The Burbs?
No, from Pete's Christmas. No, it's a straight to ABC Family like Groundhog Day type Christmas movie. You know who also starred in a Groundhog Day type Christmas movie? Amy Smart on ABC Family with 12 Dates of Christmas.
Amy Smart, you can't help ourselves. We just I did watch one more. Hold on, there was one more. Oh, it was called Dead Ringer. Now I know Dead Ringers is a. Popular Cronenberg movie, and then they just did a series with Rachel Weisz also called Dead Ringers. This is Dead Ringer, no plural. Another Betty Davis movie. These were all three Betty Davis movies. All three recommends. I would check them out if you have the time.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if they were all available readily, you know.
But
sometimes I get DVDs from the library. Check your local libraries.
You should check your local library. There's a lot of things there you
can pre-sell, like you can save stuff online and they'll just email you when it's available and then you can come get it.
Support your local libraries. You can also get video games at libraries. They're really fucking cool. The one thing I did watch over the weekend, and it's a revisit. I've been kind of revisiting a lot of things recently. Was The Last Exorcism. It came out of that found footage boom. I always forgot it starred Howard Hamlin, you know, Patrick Fabian from Better Call Saul.
Oh, does it? I only saw it once. It was kind of like a middling exorcism. Yeah. There were a lot of exorcism movies around that time.
And that is what it is, but I was a little more impressed with it's slow. It's a lot more of a slow burn for the found footage. It's not as, I think I always crossed it too much over with The Haunting in Connecticut.
And okay, that movie sure.
clicked for me. But anyway, really, really, really strong haunting movie. I was the acting's really strong in it. It is very enjoyable. I think it's on HBO. Watch it. We both watched No One Will Save You.
By the time this episode's out, it'll have been out. It's on Hulu. It's great. It's a nice little 90-minute spooky season. If you haven't heard anything about it yet, go check it out. If you have heard it and you've been like, so much hype. I'm not buying into it. Get over yourself and go watch it. It's really good. The girl from Booksmart is awesome. She's excellent in it.
I was also floored. It floored me by it because I'm not a big like alien invasion. They never get me. You know, they're always like, okay, yeah. Something like Nope, I think, is an outlier and things like that. But like,
yeah, this isn't Nope. Like, don't go in thinking this is on par with Nope.
This is a hard.
Nope is going to be a modern classic. People are going to keep revisiting Nope and realizing how fucking good it is.
Yeah. I think No One Will Save You is like what you like wish Signs was.
It has very Signs vibes. They're, you know, the farmhouse setting. Her aesthetic is kind of like old timey, even though it's kind of set in the present day. It's got that quirkiness a little bit to it, like Signs. But yeah, I agree. I actually like Signs pretty well.
I haven't visited in a while.
But I agree that this is probably what most people would have wanted Signs to be.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been mad if this was what Signs
it's
was.
It's horror. It's
it's legitimately horror. Scary and freaky and creepy. And like I said, a nice little tight 90-minute spooky season. Just a banger.
Absolutely.
A movie that probably could have done pretty good in the theater, honestly.
Yeah, that's a conversation for a different day because there's so many of these straight to streaming, especially horror, that it's like, would this have been fun in the theaters?
Kids go out to see horror movies.
Horror's the only genre that will get.
I would say maybe Last Voyage of the Demeter was a little bit of an outlier, kind of bombed a little bit.
Okay, but I can explain that one. It's a period piece Dracula movie.
We also had a period piece Dracula movie already earlier in the year. It was a comedy. It was called Renfield.
Yeah, they don't do well. Like they never done really well. I mean, like fucking Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah, honestly, since Bram Stoker, they've been chasing Dracula, and they just don't get the juice.
That's like, hey, Hollywood, I have some notes for you. If you release a big-budget fucking Wolfman movie, me and Brian will be there, but it's not going to make money.
Yeah, like, what do you think is going to happen when it's like, Robert Eggers did The Northman and it kind of underperformed. Let's have him do a remake of Nosferatu. That's a surefire moneymaker.
Yeah, I'm going to love it.
I'm going to be very excited for it as well.
But
I did want to mention, before we move on, I also did a big rewatch. If you've watched our Sinister episode, you'll know that we talked a lot about Hereditary, and I finally had my beautiful little $5 Blu-ray from Target, and I put it in, and I was blown away. Like, I don't know what my whole deal was. Maybe it was, I did realize that, like, about halfway through the movie, I remember that the first time I watched it, I kind of thought they were leading into a thing that was more Tony. This is about Toni Collette's mental illness, and her mother was mentally ill, and it's like inherited, and all this tragedy is bringing it out, and it's like that. And then I think that maybe when it all turned out to be a real thing, I was kind of like, I think I just like, I don't know,
you checked out a little bit,
kind of checked out a little or something. But like, knowing the full thing going in the second time and like what I was getting into and just like embracing it for what it was. What a picture. Like, so incredible film. Really great. Just really great rewatch. Really glad. I'll definitely be going back to it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I thought that in I did the rewatch. We talked about it last time. I did the rewatch, like, right before I finished up our Sinister one. Same thing. It terrified me at the first time. I didn't want to watch it. Now I'm, like, a little more of just, like, oh, it's a better movie than it's terrifying. And that's what I want. Cool. But yeah, so we picked The Butterfly Effect this week. We were both kind of equally like...
To be fair, can we say in this disclaimer, we also decided... Like, everything's going to be... We record so far in advance. Everything's going to be so far in the past. People not even remember. But we decided on The Butterfly Effect before Ashton Kutcher came out as a rape apologist.
Yes.
And it was already kind of in the bank. And I don't want to let... Like, he's a piece of shit and everything, and fuck him. But also, like, I can revisit this still.
That's it not helps. No, he didn't.
Like,
he
didn't. I wasn't so in love. It's not like I was so in love with Ashton Kutcher. I thought he was a good person, really. Anyway, it's just more confirmed now. So I think I'm fine with.
Where I want to stand with this is, and this will help because I think it's a good idea to paint a picture for this movie of like who Ashton Kutcher was in 2004. And
this is definitely peak of his powers era.
So like I said before, I would say like not even just race, but for the last couple of years, I was always at the right age to enjoy the Ashton Kutcher shit. Put it that way.
A huge 70s show fan.
Yeah. 70s show, middle school to, you know, his rom-coms to this and that. So
punked, I'm sure, like, being a kid your age, punked was probably all you.
Oh,
punked,
all the celebs
getting razzed and whatnot.
Like, you know, he was, bro-y enough or was funny to be, for a tween. And so I just want to say that before because I don't want to be like, some people's like, I always hated that guy. It's like, no, I always got it. But Ashton Kutcher in 2004 is... Like, he does kind of does, like, Dude, Where's My Car a few years ago. Like, he does some comedies. He's the goofy guy in that 70s show. He's on Punk'd. He's, like, this. I don't think there's an equivalent today of a comparison. If someone's like, oh, that's just a goofball who, like, your mom.
I'm not tuned in enough to young people. Yeah. I'm sure there's, like, some YouTubers that would kind of fall into this category.
Like, your mom likes, there's no problem with, he's funny, he's this and that. Like, that's his thing.
Seems safe enough, like, edgy-ish, but, like,
He comes out with, it's 2004, he comes out with The Butterfly Effect, which, watching it, I was like, what the this is, because this is clearly, like, I'm breaking away, I'm going to be a serious actor. And this is the only reason why The Butterfly Effect got made was because he attached himself on as a producer, or he attached him on and as an executive producer, and he was one of the blacklisted scripts for like years.
And we can say up top, I think that the premise and stuff is pretty great.
Oh, there's like, a good movie in here.
There's a good, this is, it's got that kind of like Stephen King-y kind of vibe to it.
There's a lot of Stephen King tropes in it. The way the kids talk, always kind of cursing. The having a heavy friend. Just trauma bombs all over the place. So Stephen King is fully into the bones of this movie.
Let me check my Infinifilm DVD. Who directed this genius work here?
Well, it's a duo.
Written and directed by Eric Bress and Jay Mackie Gruber.
So they wrote Final Destination 2.
Ooh, okay. So they got a pedigree.
Yeah.
I like Final
Destination 2. They're the one that everyone remembers, right? And I'd say their senses, if that's what they came up with within Final Destination 2, works great in Final Destinations, not so much in the trauma and times of
the things they choose to delve into in this movie that we'll get into are the problem. It's not like the way they do like some of the the, you know, like the whatever violent stuff or time travel stuff or whatever, that stuff isn't, you know, as well done in that Final mm-hmm. Destination kind of like mean spirited kind of way, but it's because of the stuff they put into the script that's like really dark, you know.
Yeah.
But let's, you know, let's see what some critics had to say. Yeah,
let me know what the critics are saying, then I'll do a synopsis.
So first of all, I want to mention, this is from one of my, it says a complex and witheringly powerful film. That's from Kurt Loder from MTV News. If you're a fan favorite reviewer, Kurt Loder.
They definitely also did.
Put up a picture of Kurt Loder. The kids know who Kurt Loder is.
They also definitely did not have the MTV punked tie-in for, you know, Kurt Loder to speak goodly.
I'm sure there wasn't like a Butterfly Effect promotional episode or month of episodes.
But also, that's like 10 years too late for Kurt Loder to be relevant too. Like,
2004, I don't know, because you got to remember, he's at Woodstock 99.
Like, okay, no, he's still
in. Woodstock 99. This is only 5 years after
I'm
that.
Thinking a little. He was it's always not,
the old guy.
It's so not Carson Daly. Like, there's a bigger punch for
you. Carson Daly was already out. I think his TRL days were behind him. I don't really know. But either way, I do have to say, now this person, I'm going to call this guy out right away. This is Paul Fisher from Dark Horizons, which I don't know if that's a magazine or a website. It doesn't really say. This is truly embarrassing, though, so I want to make sure I said his name before I read it. The Butterfly Effect is an engrossing, unpredictable, and original thriller, more chilling and compelling than The Sixth Sense. That take did not age great.
I don't think it aged well in 2004.
I think in 2004 that was an embarrassing thing to say.
Like, The Sixth Sense is an Oscar-winning...
Didn't The Sixth Sense come out in, like, 99? This is, like, 5 years out. You're just trying to be an edgelord. Of course, that's what this movie's all about.
The big comparison to this movie, I think the equal, like, you could be like this and that, is Donnie Darko.
Yeah, this feels very Donnie
Darko. But I know I don't have the highest opinion of Donnie Darko. Donnie Darko, better movie.
Yeah, I think overall a better movie, but I do think it suffers from some of the same kind of like try hard edgelord,
you know what?
Like tone issues. It's definitely a better movie than this.
Watching this movie and like knowing doing the rewatch of this movie and knowing what people think of it, or like I should say like peers,
sure,
or not peers, like friends and other people that aren't just like movie snobs like me and me, think of it. It reminds me of it's the thriller version of Boondock Saints.
Oh, okay.
We revisited Boondock Saints for other show. I remember hating it.
I think I'm gonna have kind of a similar like conclusion about how I felt about Boondock Saints too.
Yeah,
which is embarrassing for me, really.
So, I don't know. There's been people all through my life going, "Yeah, it's a good movie. Like that is like the what is the butter? Yeah, that's because."
Because nobody's seen it since 20 years ago.
Yeah, and in 20 years ago.
20 years ago, and when they were a child, and they were like, yeah, that's pretty good.
I was, I was 12, so let's say, I was 13.
I got married in 2004,
yeah,
so.
And other people I've talked to, you were 15, or younger. Like, you know, this is a mind blow. This is us writing a script at age 18, being like, yeah.
Like, there's a reason, there's a reason, and I hate when movies do this. It's one of those big things. It's like, don't show a better movie in your movie. They go in and see Seven.
I'm
like, oh, Tony, come on.
But there's...
You dare to compare yourself, to put yourself in the same mindset of
Brian,
Seven.
There's so many problems with the Seven scene to begin with. One, if you look at the marquee bill, I think they're going to see Dumb and Dumber. It's the other thing is Dumb and Dumber. Those movies don't come out a year. They're a year apart. They're a year and months apart. I looked at the dates today.
Yeah.
Like, two, they just, not, except for Evan, by the way, our lead character is Evan, young Ashton Kutcher.
Well, isn't everyone else at the young version, Logan Lerman, or one of those, like, good actors?
Yeah, Percy Jackson or something.
Yeah, I think he was Percy Jackson,
Everyone else, except for him, remembers murdering a baby and a woman, and they're like, you know what, let's go see Seven.
Yeah, we should start getting into it a little
bit.
Yeah,
let's get into it. So, I'm going
to before we start, though, I do have to shout out three quick casting things. Melora Walters as the mom, Love her. A lot of her work is in TV, but she's also in Boogie Nights. Just a great character
actress.
Who's
she in Boogie Nights?
She ends up marrying Don Cheadle. She's the lady that Don Cheadle ends up...
Okay, yeah. Yes.
The
only happy storyline in Boogie Nights.
Exactly. She gets the only happy ending in Boogie Nights. And she's also in a great episode of Seinfeld. She's in the Hamptons. She's the topless. She's the George's topless date, the Hamptons. She's great. I love her. Love Eric Stoltz. You could not cast a better creep than Eric Stoltz.
He finally gets his time travel movie.
When Ashton Kutcher shows up and he's like the older Eric Stoltz and he's just his character from Pulp Fiction. He's got the bathrobe and everything. Same guy. And then shout out to Cameron Bright, who like 2 years after this is going to be in every single movie. But in this movie, he's just playing the age of Tommy where he sits on the stairs and pulls the doll's head off. And he never has a line. But he's a very distinct looking child and he's in like 10 movies that came out in 2006, 2007.
He was in Running Scared. He was
And he's the kid in X-Men 3, and he's like in a bunch of stuff around that time.
Good sociopath kid.
He was just about to pop off, but it's funny that he's as a Tommy, because there's different ages of Tommies, just like there's different ages of Evans, he's the Tommy with the least to do.
Sure. Also, I'd like to give just some casting shout outs here too, because
there's the casting.
Ethan Suplee, who's like not for weight reasons, one of the grossest characters ever on screen.
Oh, in this movie specifically, disgusting. But you got to give it, this movie and American History X were the two movies that figure out how fucking terrifying Ethan Suplee can be.
Oh, yes.
Like, he's a mountain of a man, and he's still huge. Like, he's not big, heavy the way he was, but he's still, like, a really big guy. He got shredded. He got, like, all ripped. He looks like a professional wrestler now.
Oh, yeah, he looks great today. And then Eldon Henson, Mighty Ducks, Foggy Nelson.
I had totally forgotten that Eldon Henson was in this, and I was so excited.
So...
love him. I love that he played the big kid in the Mighty Ducks, but that was as tall as he ever got, and he's like a manlet now.
The Bash Brothers.
Oh, I love the Bash Brothers.
All right.
Big two guy right here.
Oh, it's the superior film.
When they bring in all the guys, all the different characters from out of the state, and they all have special skills. It's like the
that montage. And then we get the Whoomp There It Is montage in LA with when we meet Keenan.
The Knuckle Puck. Come on. Keenan. Keenan Thomas.
Was it Dallas that is his surname? Dallas with the lasso and the
Western. Oh, so Julie the Cat Gaffney, the like girl goalie.
She's the best.
So,
all right. So,
I mean, as a child, I think she was hot. Not now. Maybe she still is.
She still is.
Age appropriately,
of all my life, she is.
You've been keeping tabs on Julie the Cat Gaffney?
Who hasn't? I will read the synopsis and then we'll just kind of go through this. I actually do want to read off the traumas in you before going with that because I've counted 14. All right. So, college student Evan Treborn is afflicted with headaches so painful that he frequently blacks out. While unconscious, Evan is able to travel back in time to difficult moments in his childhood. He can also alter the past for friends like Kaylee, who was molested by her father. But changing the past can drastically alter the present, and Evan finds himself in a nightmarish alternate reality.
Evan is very stupid and does not think at all.
Including one where he's locked away in prison. So that is a terrible synopsis.
Well, also, they fuck up in the beginning because they say a college student has headaches so bad. He hasn't had a blackout since he was a kid.
And that's his journals. That's how many blacks out. So I'm just going to read the traumas because I feel like
comes your trigger warning, everybody.
I feel like it's just the best way to instead of just going through the plot, I'm just going to read
that way
these.
When we're talking later, you'll know what we're meant. We're talking. Yeah.
So, first and foremost, child pornography, being duped into a Peter Pan child pornography, strangled.
And implied molestation also, yes, I would say.
Implied molestation, strangled to death by his institutionalized father. Dad is immediately killed in front of him, accidentally killing a mother and her infant daughter while playing with dynamite. Dog burned alive. Kaylee commits suicide, kills Kaylee's brother in cold blood. He uses the R word in prison. I'm sorry, prison. He's raped in prison. Ashton Kutcher just drops an N-bomb for some fun reason.
Well, he's trying to get it. To be fair, he's trying to get in with white supremacists.
It's doing it.
He's like doing a thing. He's trying to get in with
this. He doesn't sound very believable.
He says the Kessler for a Jewish person too, which is it's like a relic. It's like, oh, that was like an old timey one coming back.
All right, so that would add us to 15. Lenny kills Tommy, but saves his. But the dog does get saved. Lenny is an institution, and Kaylee becomes a drug addicted prostitute. Evan becomes a double amputee. Mother developed lung cancer after becoming a chain smoker. Accidentally kills Kaylee with dynamite. I don't know if I'm missing any of the traumas, but I have there's about 14 to 15, and they're on repeat.
Right, because he keeps going through, like, they revisit that Peter Pan kitty porn scene, like, so four times.
So, a big flaw of the film. I mean, this movie is a lot of flaws. A big flaw in the structure of this movie is we don't get to, like, Ashton Kutcher's, like, the time travel stuff till about 40 minutes into the movie.
Yeah, and we spend a lot of time. Well, also, to be fair, we should disclaimer, we watch the director's cut. Yeah,
we get
about 6 minutes longer, and it's totally restructured. It's different. As far as, yeah.
But we get so much setup of these things that you don't see that we then just go revisit again. I'm saying it doesn't
I don't remember the original cut as much, and maybe they cut back and forth a little more, but I did like the setup at the beginning. The idea of, like, all this fucked up shit keeps happening, and Ashton Kutcher is, like, present for all of it, but he keeps having these blackouts. He can't remember anything. And then, like, I'm looking at it from the Melora Walters perspective, the parent coming at it from that end. And it's a very, like, Exorcist scenario where, like, you feel very powerless. Your kid is clearly struggling. You know his dad had mental health problems. You know,
she's just trying to protect her child, and she can't.
Like, knowing all and seeing that, the way that played out, but I do agree that, like, they take too long to get to what is the meat of the movie.
Because I'll say, I think a lot of the things with the kids and stuff are pretty damn bad. Like, they work. It's honestly all the Ashton Kutcher shit. It's when we get to him and being Ashton Kutcher in the role of Evan. By the way, the worst fact of this movie is they originally wanted to call him Chris Treborn. Chris. Do you know what that translates to? Christ Reborn.
Christ Reborn, yeah. That's not subtle.
Evan Treborn is still Event Reborn.
That's like in the new Ninja Turtles movie when he's trying to come up with his name, and he's like, I'll just be Michael Angelo. Angelo will just be my last name. That's literally the same joke. That's terrible. No, we start off in the beginning, and there's all this, you know, you just see, like,
let's go.
Evan's just incurring kind of trauma after trauma at the beginning.
Well, we start off with, he has drawings of what we find out later to be the prison scene.
She gets called to the school. He did a weird drawing. He doesn't remember doing it. Like, all these things keep happening. He doesn't remember them.
They should have been like, wow, this is dramatic, but you're a really good artist.
Very interesting art style here. Yeah. I don't know where that came from.
But they suggest, hey, write like you black out. You have these little blackouts. Write in your journals. And he's pretty young.
He starts journaling when he's like 7, and he writes in.
Yeah, and then we experience the Eric Stoltz scene for the first time.
Right. Yeah.
Because he meets Kaylee.
That's like before or after, like, all the stuff
that's before, around the same.
Because there's like three ages. There's that age. There's a like a middle, like a 12-year-old, 14-year-old age.
So
there's Ashton Kutcher age.
Yeah. So there's three defining events that are. There's the pay, there I guess four really, but
because the pedo, when he's young, you have the one father. In the drawing that he doesn't remember, and also she sees him like standing in the kitchen holding a knife at one point.
Yeah,
just kind of
try to tie back in later to being a thing that happened when
it's almost like a false start. Like,
yeah,
And then, so you have that, you have the stuff with the Eric Stoltz recording them doing a sexy tape, sexy video, and he blacks some of that out. And then you have his visit to his dad. His dad's
institutionalized. That's the one that is the most important of the movie, but you just ignore it as, okay, dad's crazy.
Ashton Kutcher fucks it up so bad. Like, we'll talk about it when we get there. I can't, of all the mistakes.
No, just talk about it. Talk about it. Movie,
well, no, because I want to build to it. So,
okay.
We'll just, but anyway,
so he,
the blackout there is he's about to sit down and talk to his dad, and then he blacks out. When he wakes up, his dad is like throttling him. He's like on him, choking the life out of him.
And his dad should have done the job.
And they beat him off. They beat the dad to the ground. Nice. You said they kill him. They kill him.
Oh, he's dead because the next scene is the funeral.
Oh, okay. So they beat him to death.
Then he gets a funeral. Like, he gets, like, a family funeral, too.
Okay. All right. I didn't remember. I must have looked down and take a note during that part. So you get those traumas when he's, like, a young kid. Then when he's a little older, he's got a crush on his friend which I also very weird choice to center the love story around two kids who are sexually abused together. Because, like,
yeah,
really messes up kids the way they, like, process relationships and stuff. And, like,
well,
it's just a very, now, not to say that they wouldn't have this connection, but, you know, it's a very weird thing to put in your movie and your love story. So start with that at the core.
Even in so in our ending, right? I won't go at all. But even Kaylee, Amy Smart's happy ending is still a really big assumption that this never happened. This never actually ended up happening to her.
Yeah, well, you're supposed to think she goes off with her mom before any of that happens because she chose to stay with her dad. It's a gamble.
It's still a big gamble. Like, this is how conceited and self-centered Evan is as a character.
We can get into it. Let's talk a little bit more about what happens when they...
Yeah, let's go through it, because like I said, I've been excited to talk about this movie, right?
He's got a crush on the girl. They kiss. The brother's a psycho. He, like, holds a grudge because the dad... Because Eric Stoltz, like, kind of like... I don't know. The kid's real messed up because he saw his sister get molested and with this other kid, and he has, like, messed up feelings and...
He's just protecting
that part is actually very accurate to how kids were abused. You know what I mean? They have their perception of what relationships are and what love is can be very messed up. So I would say that's actually pretty accurate portrayal for that.
That happens, right? That's all there. And yeah, that's Tommy has this like raging.
We see him kissing at the movies and he beats
that's the last of it. Or I would say that's not the last.
That's before the junkyard.
Before the last. So they're kissing at the movies. It's like a sweet scene. The two kids.
Oh, he's like, after the mailbox. So it's mailbox first.
So it goes mailbox, right? And we don't see what happens in the mailbox. Honestly.
They get a stick of dynamite. They put it in a mailbox. They're going to blow up a fancy mailbox. You don't see that a mom and baby are maybe going to. Oh, no.
Later. No.
Damn, I can't keep it straight.
No. I can keep it straight. Just let me talk.
Sorry.
So that's the thing. Yeah, you see them. They find the stick of dynamite, not a cherry bomb. There's a nap.
He calls it a blockbuster.
They call it the blockbuster. It's a fucking stick of dynamite. They find it in Eric Stoltz's house too, and I like that's like a fine like okay they're just shitty kids, whatever.
Well, they're gonna do just a vandalism.
They're gonna blow up like this bougie like mailbox thing that. Apparently, they only made 3 of those mailboxes because it was so expensive, and they got the shot on the last one. The shot they wanted on the last one.
Yeah, thank goodness.
So anyway, they do that. And be honest, that reveal, though, later didn't make a what the fuck? Because it's so extra. Like, everything in this movie is just extra.
Yeah, very. Well, that's
so it's like, we can't just kill the mom. We can't just kill the mom.
Yeah.
She has to be with a fucking infant who then goes, you want to get the mail, honey?
The little baby hand reaches out to open the mailbox.
Oh, that is the funniest. So they do that. Like, so that's that.
All
right.
But then he has another blackout. All of a sudden, he doesn't see. He wakes up. They're carrying their friend through the woods.
And one friend's catatonic. And
Tommy's like, you know, don't ever talk about that again. Yeah, I'll
Lenny,
kill you that shit, you know?
Lenny is catatonic.
Yeah.
Which has to be an other
Lenny, who ends up being Eldon Henson.
Yeah, he's catatonic. And then Tommy's just like, wakes. Oh, sorry, Evan just wakes up. It's like, what happened? And they won't tell him at all. Which what happened? Which is
yeah, not even the kids won't tell him. I think they probably. I don't know. If I was this kid's friend and we all almost got, I would just think he was faking.
I think that's
trying to use blackouts to get out of it. That's what I think.
I mean, the mom thinks that.
The mom implies that, yeah, but she ends up believing him pretty quickly. As his friend, I would still be more skeptical than the mom.
So what's wild about that, though, is this shit happens, and then, like, he's still asking questions of what happened. So I'm just going to assume this is the next weekend. We even hear some stuff on the news that they're looking for a vandalism. You know, they're looking for a tragedy.
Yeah, we hear on the news, like, the kind of tragedy happened at this, you know, this mailbox explosion or whatever.
Terrible cops in the town to not be able to figure this one out. Yeah. So anyway, they do that. As you already said, Tommy catches Evan at young Ashton Kutcher and young Amy Smart kissing, freaks out, takes it as this big, like, F you to him.
Betrayal. And what it comes down to is that, like, he's jealous of Ashton Kutcher's care of Evan, and, like, his sister's the only good thing in his life, and he's like, you're taking the only good thing in my life. That's the way the movie kind of, like, portrays it. It's obviously more complicated than that, what with all the molestation things.
Yeah, it's all just kind of combined there. And then the last big traumatic event before his mom's like, I'm getting the fuck out of here, is he holds up in a junkyard and takes Evan, young Ashton Kutcher's dog, puts him in a burlap sack, chains it up.
He's gonna
burn him alive, and he does. And Evan.
Well, they come in to try to stop him.
Evan blacks out.
One of his classic blackouts, and when he wakes up, the dog's burnt. Lenny has stood there and watched the dog burn. Lenny is struggling to get the dog.
And Kaylee got hit. Kaylee gets hit with a 2x4.
She gets hit in the head up here. Later, she's when she gets the scar on her face.
Okay.
The first time, she just gets knocked in the head.
And as a kid. My memory of this movie, watching it and later, was honestly just scary looking Amy Smart for years. Everything else was kind of a blur. So those are our big events. Those are all.
And after that happens with the dog and everything,
this is about 40 minutes.
His mom moves him away, and he's all like, "I'll remember you. I'll come back for you." And then literally never makes an attempt to contact Amy Smart ever again.
I'll come back for you. And then we see Ashton Kutcher in college. Okay,
Ashton Kutcher.
Which, again, so he's a 21-year-old man, or boy, essentially.
21, 22, yeah.
And he's like a psych. He's a psych major. They basically portray him as this kind of nerd.
But he's got that kind of, like,
Nerd, just a guy.
Was it Josh Hartnett in The Faculty where he's like, he's like obviously super smart, but kind of cool and like,
yeah.
Kinda...
Well, buddy, it's funny that you mentioned Josh Hartnett, because you know who they wanted for this movie before?
Yeah, that's
Josh Hartnett was offered. Sean William Scott was offered. Joshua Jackson was offered.
Joshua Jackson.
So anyway,
this could have been his, like, he coming off a Buffy movie. He did Urban Legend instead. And honestly, good choice.
Yeah, good job. No, so he So wakes up, and yeah, we like see him, like you said, Ethan Suplee as his goth roommate who just like bangs tens.
Who bangs tens and then like uses Evan's shirt to wipe his gross like
watch Ethan Suplee in that scene. His arms just moving underneath where it's like he's still jerking off and then he's like throws it to him. He's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I think he was like, yeah, I don't know if he was finishing off or he's just cleaning himself up, but either way, you don't want to get touched by that shirt.
It's grimy. They need it. How much Ethan Suplee's character has sex, they need it like a doorknob system.
Yeah. Honestly, though, Ethan Suplee's a freak. I would imagine that, like, a couple times Evan just hopped in. I bet he got in on that shit. On a crazy night,
he blacked out.
Years, Evan comes home to the dorm and shit's getting wild. He's just like, you know what? He had an earring. He had a little necklace with a chain. Come on.
He was feeling it. So Evan... how are you good? So Evan... brings a girl back from like a party, and for some reason he has his journals with him.
She looks under his bed and finds them.
Yeah, but for some reason he has them to begin
with. Is he still journaling at all at that point?
No, they're just old composition notebooks.
From when he was a teenager.
Yeah, not even a tween.
Yeah. It's weird that they're there, but it's even weirder that as he starts to read them and is clearly visibly getting upset, she is so into it.
Oh my god, she goes, keep going. Oh. This is literally her fault. This whole movie is this woman's fault. Because she goes, keep going. And he's like, no, because the first sentence is like, and I watch the bodies burn. You know, or like the smell, like it's the most.
I could smell Cricket's burning body or whatever.
Yeah. And he blacks out, and she wakes him up, but she just hang out there, and she's like, oh my god, you're up. Not really like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. This guy roofied himself.
But this is how he, like, it seems like he had just kind of, like, when he moved with his mom, he just kind of put this shit behind him, mm-hmm. and kind of hadn't thought about it very much. So and, then, like, he gets into these journals, and he starts thinking about his blackouts. And this is where I was going to say, I kind of like the cyclical nature of, it's like a very Terminator-style plot, where he has blackouts, and then he's older, trying to investigate those blackouts is what ends up causing the blackouts, and that's the black, you know, that's what's happening. I didn't hate that.
Okay, yeah, because they do introduce that, like, all this travel is affecting his mental state and capacity, because
that
he
comes a
remembers
little later. Everything. He hasn't done any traveling really yet.
But so he kind of travels, and then he gets whiff of the molestation. We'll just call it that.
Well, he's starting to look through the, like I said, he gets back
looking through, looking
through the notebooks, and he remembers, and it's like he starts reading one, and it gets weird. This is where his kind of abilities. I'm on the fence. I want to ask you about this,
buddy. They make no sense. This is like,
well. That's what I was going to say. But do we like that they don't bother to explain it and they just kind of leave it? It's just a thing. It's like The Shining. He can just do it. I kept feeling like they were trying to lead. His project is about memory. They say something about how he has pet worms and that's part of his memory experiment. Never went back to that or talked about that in any way. I was like,
I didn't even pick up on that.
Yeah. I thought, well, I was like legitimately wondering. I was very closely trying to figure out if they were going to try to tie this ability to something that had to do with an experiment he was doing or like a drug he was testing or a science machine, like the second Happy Death Day movie of some kind.
Well, it doesn't. So.
But apparently it's just an inherited ability.
It's an inherited
all the
ability.
All the men in his family have.
And I don't mind that. But
no, that's
just
what
looking,
I'm saying.
Like, I was just looking through my notes of it. But where it doesn't make sense is in the logic of what things can happen. Because he learns, okay, I could fix, like basically he learns at this point, oh, if I get a scar, I could undo scars, basically is, if I get a scar, maybe I can undo my scars. That's like the mission statement.
It's like I can go back and I can. Well, it starts out as I can figure out what happened in these moments where I blacked out, but mm-hmm. then it progresses to I can undo some of these traumas.
Yes.
But
what doesn't like there's one thing that happens and it were truly just it's the hands. It's his hands being crucified.
Oh, well,
show.
Yeah, we have. Oh,
I know that's a very far in event, and I don't even know when we're going to get there. That is the one event that should be present his whole time in any storyline.
He doesn't, in the timeline we see first in the beginning, he doesn't do that. That's a thing he doesn't do. He does the drawing. I don't know. Yeah, that's hard to say.
Let me just look.
That part should, you're right, that should be part of it, because if the drawing is part of it, then also the hand scar should be part of it. Oh, okay, we're getting too far in advance.
We are, but it's fine. There's just questions about, like,
we haven't even talked about that guy's brown face yet.
We haven't touched on prison at all.
We haven't got to. Let's
go a long episode, guys, because this is a packed movie.
Okay, so he's getting into the notebooks. We haven't got to a couple things. That he goes home before he makes his first trip, mm-hmm. before he figures out his powers, he goes home to his hometown. He goes to visit Lenny, Lenny, right? Which is Eldon Henson. Yes. Eldon Henson is basically like a shut-in. He's just a quiet guy. He's still living at home, still living in his old bedroom, in his mom's house, building models and hanging out in his room full of models. Clearly damaged from what happened. But he says some stuff to Ashton Kutcher that like he doesn't really remember.
Mm-hmm.
But there's clearly stuff that happened that like is in Lenny's head. So, and then he goes, and Ashton Kutcher is such an asshole here. Evan,
it's the worst, one of the worst characters at like antagonist.
He just keeps going to his old friend's house and immediately drudging up all these horrific traumas.
So,
goes to Amy Smart's house.
Well, that's
like she's so excited to see him. And, like, it's clearly, like, a bright spot. And immediately he's just like, let's talk about how your dad tried to molest us.
And at the same time, like, her life was, like, not off. Like from our seating service.
She grew up into a Sarah Koch.
She grew up. She's a waitress. She's, like, but she's happy to see him. She's clear to show this happened. But she's living, like, she's clearly doing her best.
She had moved on to the point, at least, where she had buried it and wasn't thinking about it.
So,
just getting by.
Ashton Kutcher's character also is never consistent enough who his character wants to be as like a person, because he's like his character only fits with what they want the scene to be. So he's always every scene's in a vignette of itself, because when he goes back in time and he like confronts when he has to confront Eric Stoltz and calls him the fuck, it's not how current day Ashton Kutcher talks.
Yeah, we can talk about that. We can get into anyway.
Amy Stark commits suicide. Herself. This is the big, because he brings up pedophilia. Also, I did do a little bit of research.
She turns up all the shit. She ends up killing herself.
Yeah, which is so dramatic. Like that's not Lord. Really also how trauma like works, but like that is. Which again, it's a movie. It's a movie,
And they're not good at dealing with. We know that.
It's so dramatic. So, and the brother called, like, the brother's like, you piece of shit, I'm coming to kill you. Like,
I'm coming to kill you. She killed herself. I blame you. And this is when he's, like, going to use his, he's decided he's going to use his weird powers and experiment with them and try to figure out how to fix all this and save her. And he goes back, the way it works is he reads the journal, and basically as he reads the memory, like, he kind of, Days of Future Past into his former body,
mm-hmm.
like Wolverine does in that movie. You know what I'm talking about? You remember?
Oh yeah, I remember. Like,
he goes into his past self, his current memory into his past body. But then he's a little kid, and like Joe said, he doesn't act anything like the Ashton Kutcher we've seen at all. Also, he acts in such a way that, like, if you were an adult, you'd just backhand the kid across the room. You wouldn't even like. You're Eric Stoltz. You're about to molest. You're a gross creep. And then all of a sudden you're letting some kid call you a fuckbag. You would just boot this kid down. You just
Eric Stoltz. Him in the head. Eric Stoltz goes, "How did you do that?" All he said was fuck.
What? Talk? What? And he calls him up, and I hate the fuckbag thing. They keep treating it like it's some uber insult. Like it's epic, and like it really takes Eric Stoltz down. He has no answer for fuckbag, and it's like. Ugh, what? That's nothing. That is a nothing insult.
It's so corny. Because that's like you said, like, I think that, like, the setup stuff with the kids, like, even with the trauma stuff, it's not where I'm laughing. I'm laughing all the, when they go back stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, and like you talked about, and I think you just hit on there, it's corny. It's that embarrassing edginess of the early 2000s. It's like, this whole movie, there's an interesting idea here, but the problem and it fucks up the tone, is this kind of, like, edgelord, early 2000s, dead baby joke mentality to everything, where, like...
Well, speaking of dead babies.
You take horrific traumas and treat them like, you know, these, like, I don't know, superhero moments where a little kid can go back and talk up, you know, and talk down a molester and shit. It's just, like, it's all handled so crass.
It's handled poorly. So badly. Yeah.
It's an interesting plot. You can see why this script made it to the blacklist, because it probably wasn't like this.
No,
you know?
No.
Ideas were here, but it probably didn't have this kind of sheen of, like, grime over it. This is like a Christina Aguilera music video. Everything's kind of wet and like, you know what I mean?
It's you take a chip. If you take a chip to it, it'll just scoop off a bunch of gunk.
Scrape a little of this off the screen.
Yeah, no, I actually really like that comparison. but the Christina Aguilera music video comparison, it So that does happen, right? And it goes back after, because I gotta go back. He's like distraught. Buddy,
the thing is, this is where we get into, he doesn't think anything through. And this is, we didn't really talk about what the butterfly effect means. We made fun of the quote, but we didn't, maybe there might be people who don't know. The idea is just that something small, like the wings of a butterfly flapping on one side of the world, can create a small ripple in a lake.
So I have
a wave that becomes a tidal wave, you know?
So then this is,
small changes make big changes.
So these are where the really big criticisms come in for me for this movie. Like, one, it only changes 5 people's lives ever.
Yeah.
It's a really failure.
It only changes the people that he needs it to change. Like, it only affects his mom when it gives her cancer.
Yes.
But any other time he does everything, she's just fine, I guess.
Yeah.
Her life went on normally, even though his was totally changed.
Well, and what's a bummer about it, or not a bummer, but like could have been more interesting, is like, oh, when he does go back, you know, Ethan Suplee's character, like, he's different. Maybe he's not just always the goth.
Yeah.
I guess at one point,
even some subtler stuff around, like when he goes to the diner, it could have been slightly different, like even things, decorated different. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's well, they use the same hospital over and over again.
Yeah.
But I won't fault them. I mean, it was a hit. It was a low budget. It did.
Yeah.
But so that, like, it's lazy in the sense of, like you just said, it'll change, like the mom, it doesn't, nothing different with that. Like, I think they throw in one thing, it was like, I think it's this one, we go to the jock setting, and he's like, it's like, she has a voicemail with, like, her and, like, a boyfriend.
We do see her, too, because, like, the jock timeline is where they go to the psych.
Yes, but earlier, she's like, leave a message for me and, like, Jim, or whoever, like, and he's like, Ashton Kutcher's like, oh, who's, whoever Jim, like, he doesn't know, but whatever, we're meant to believe they're rich and they're happy. Because look at, he's
going to an Ivy League school. He's in all the fancy.
And you go with all your friends.
Frats, and yeah.
But he finds out that that Foggy Nelson, Lenny, you know, is still kind of catatonic.
It didn't really fix Lenny. It didn't fix.
No, Lenny's always going to be
and
one.
I want to talk a little bit about the carelessness. He, especially because he's trying to be a tough guy edgelord when he's a little kid,
yeah,
and he's trying to say, he says, you know, keep your hands off of your daughter, but what you need to do is discipline your son, which ends up making him, Eric Stoltz, be even more abusive to his son. Plus, the kid heard him say that when he was Cameron Bright age. He heard
twisting
him say that.
Twisting a baby doll
so
head.
He knows that it's basically weird Ashton Kutcher's fault that happened to him.
But
and then, like,
twisting a baby doll head while he's
at it. Yeah, always the baby doll head.
Sad.
And then, and so, like, he's still a psycho, but, like, that just goes to show, like, and I don't know. Ashton Kutcher never learns anything from that experience. He never takes any more care on his other trips.
No, that's the problem.
Dumb, careless mistakes.
I'm like, I'm fine with this.
Choose your words more carefully, dude.
The first few times, right, in a time travel, but you're fine with the mistakes, right? You Groundhog's Day or a Happy Death Day, right? We keep fucking up because we're making. And then even Amy Smart's 12 Dates at Christmas, I'm not even kidding, has better time travel, like reliving the same day over, I'm considering time travel, has better mistake care than Butterfly Effect.
Ashton Kutcher, like, for all his studies in college, goes, he didn't learn about the butterfly effect because he is just.
But he's a big psych major.
He's off the chain. He's just flying by the seat of his pants. He, like, never. I mean, a couple times he kind of does it in a panic, but he never thinks anything through farther than, I'll just go back and do this.
So and he just keeps doing it. And then, like, so the first one, actually, right, the jock one.
He fixes it for him. It's pretty good for him and Amy
Smart.
It's
not a bad timeline. And honestly, all he needed to do was just not murder a guy, and there's faults in his murder, so he's different, right? But he realizes, because it's the same age, and he's proposing in college, which is crazy.
Yeah, he's probably like 22 still, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're about graduated by the let's just say 21
or 22, something like
big
that.
Big guy on campus, like, clearly a dickhead, bullies, you know, is a bully. Like,
yeah,
it's all
one of those things where he wakes up and he realizes he's got kind of a nice life, but he's also maybe kind of a kind of person he doesn't like. You know, he doesn't realize.
Which, take in this time. This is the timeline you take.
You have time to change. You can just change. Just be yourself now.
You could just correct. You could just be like, hey man, I wasn't. You could filter it out, and you maybe change the frat culture, and it's a different movie.
Yeah, there you go.
At least at that campus and your friends. But he doesn't do that. He takes Amy Smart out and basically is going to propose to her. But someone's like, hey, man, your fucking car's wrecked. He's like, what? And they run out. And where Tommy decides, is it Tommy? Yeah, where Tommy gets his old dog's dog collar and he remembers it.
Yeah, he kept, yeah, I don't know, he kept big, it, but he hung it from the rearview mirror so they like, know it's him.
And Amy Smart, which one of the, there's a lot of dumb lines in this. Oh, yeah. I didn't tell you he got out like a week ago.
You didn't think to mention that, huh? And then I love the whole thing of like, he goes to say, don't, he might be watching us. It's like, well, it seems like he already pretty much knows what's going on.
And like Ashton Kutcher, then there's a fight, right? And Ashton Kutcher A pepper sprays him.
Well, can we talk about the fact that like Tommy's a little runt? And I would have throttled that kid. I'd have chokeslammed that kid through a table.
Yeah, Ashton Kutcher's like a now, big actor.
He catches the dude at the movies with the pipe. But then I was watching that little kid throw punches in his tiny little arm. It's like,
It was the wrong cast.
There's no way. There's no way I'd be so stunned from that pipe that I would not be able to throttle this little kid. And this is a, you know, I just. Ashton Kutcher's like 6'2".
Yeah, he's a big guy. It's wrong casting. And then,
I have right here Ashton did what needed to be done, put down one dog for another. That was my note here.
That's a good note. He did, but also it's 2004. He's a white Ivy League rich kid who was in self-defense who has no priors to our knowledge and defended off a guy who just got out of prison. That man, there's a difference between prison and jail. There's no trial, there's no anything. They sent him right to prison.
Yeah, I remember somebody at one point being like, oh, we can definitely get you off on self-defense, but that clearly doesn't happen.
His mom was like, we're going to try a self-defense title.
It's like she's talking to him, he's already in prison, right? He's like behind the glass.
Behind the glass, he's in prison. Yeah. As if
you don't go straight to prison.
As if his mom wouldn't post up bail.
Yeah, they're
so,
clearly rich. They clearly got the money.
So, I get movie logic. I get where it needs to go. But it's just when you think about it, because then there's only because what about Kaylee? I actually think part of that timeline, she killed herself again, and that's why the mom. No, that's why the mom didn't answer.
That's pretty dark, man.
They didn't ever say exactly
what happened.
But she, because he asked, what about Kaylee? And she doesn't say a fucking word about Kaylee, you know? So we get to prison, and there's the one famous, real famous line, and this movie's so obsessed with fucking rape.
Whoever wrote this line watched Roadhouse.
Blood on my knife, or shit on my dick.
Yeah, he saw the I used to fuck guys like you in prison and said, we can do grosser.
Yeah, and that's a line that said, he has a stereotypical Hispanic religious.
That is character actor Kevin Durant.
Oh, he's very white.
Brown face.
He's very white.
He's maybe most notably the Blob in Wolverine Origins.
And he's in prison, and like, yeah, I gotta get out, figure it out, and he's like begging his mom to get the notebooks.
The white supremacists steal his notebooks, so he can't use his notebooks to get
it. The white supremacists just read it like he's like they're in high school girls. Like, and one day when
it's like he's reading his like his journal diary out to all the other girls.
Like a lot of just things. That's why this movie to me is hysterical. A lot of just things just don't fit.
Yeah.
So and they make
the
it very
same dumb. Guy who said blood on my knife or shit on my dick is also like, I found your smash book. Ashton likes Kimmy.
Yeah, and the problem with it is though, they're reading it and it's some of the most dramatic shit ever where they're still prison. They still go, oh man, this you wanna join our gang? It's pretty
actually,
messed
this
up.
Happened, it's kinda same thing kinda happened to me. It's kinda what messed me up.
Yeah. Like everyone's just a cartoon character in this movie. Like,
oh yeah.
And I think the biggest cartoon character is Kaylee all the time. Like,
yeah, well, especially where we're about to go with Kaylee.
So
is, like, so far, she's such a, like, a stereotype of a cliche of a horrific, like, of a ignorant person's idea of a sex worker. So
maybe, there's a big question here. I just looked at my notes. Which we'll get to, because it's just the cliche of the sex worker, and that's where we're gonna go. So you get the notebooks. There's about five timeline changes here, right? Four or five. Why don't the journals change? Is it just because, like, if it's like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, is there, like, there's just always these canon events?
He's got some canon event. Well, is it like the events we see, the blackouts are like his
they're canon
focus.
Event. Okay.
They're a canon event. Those blackouts, he can always focus on those, because no matter what, that blackout happens.
Because I guess
whatever happens, because that's a travel point. The blackout,
I guess,
is a travel point.
The so. Journals were suggested prior to the big event. Okay.
Right. He starts the journal after he writes about the.
He writes about the draw. It's after the draw.
He writes about the molestation, like, after it happened.
Yeah, which it also confuses me that, like, he doesn't remember them, but he was able to journal about them at a certain point. Anyway, we already spent too much time on that.
He gets his journals back in prison. He's doing his, like, emergency.
And he doesn't get the ones he wants either.
Right. He just gets some pages because they get ripped out of his hand.
But
and
he gets
so
raped
the,
first.
It's the blockbuster, right?
He gets raped first.
He gets mouth raped.
And he's going to do two guys.
No,
at
no,
once.
He's going to go down for mouth rape, and he stabs the guys. He doesn't ever.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever.
No, there's a scene. They imply that it happens to him.
Oh, do they? Okay.
Yeah.
Again, I might have taken notes. I'll take your word for it. Sorry, I missed it.
That was, I think, his breaking point to be like, well, I got to go give myself over to the white supremacists so I could.
Whatever it takes to get this back.
Yeah, and like we said earlier, Ashton Kutcher had a note. I mean, it's part of the movie, but it's still jarring to always hear a K and an N.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he definitely dropped some, yeah.
And so he travels back, and then this is when we just skip to the blockbuster.
Is this that one? No. This is when he goes back to Crockett, because this is when he gives Lenny the shard. He's like,
oh fuck, you're right.
And again, this is the thing where he doesn't choose his words carefully.
He says,
he's not
take
like
care of him.
Lenny. He's got my dog in a bag. Take this shard thing and cut my dog out while I distract him. He's like, Lenny, today is your day of destiny. You're gonna right the wrongs. Take this dagger.
Yeah, yeah. He just gives a couple words.
A murder pep talk.
This Simpsons fucking Treehouse of Horror toaster does this butterfly effect better.
Yeah.
Everything's fine except for the poisonous gas that flips our insides out.
It's so funny. Like, the setup. The setup is so long of Ashton Kutcher handing him this shard. You're like, okay, we get it. We know what's gonna happen. Like,
yes,
you don't even have. There's no question that he's ever gonna do anything but stab Tommy.
Yeah, and that's my main point of being.
They're
like,
so careful to not say anything about the dog to make sure he doesn't accidentally give him an idea of the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, the way he talks for like
Lenny is stabbing Tommy tenfold.
Yeah.
Apparently, also I was reading some. There's not many like fun facts and shit about here, but like one of them was Lenny, why am I always blanking on his name? Ellen Henson also did a little bit of weight loss and gain for this movie.
Oh, okay.
I
thought definitely the end one we're going to talk about.
The good Lenny.
He definitely looks thinner.
Is 20 pounds lighter. Bad Lenny is always 20 pounds heavier.
Of course, because being fat is a moral failing and it makes you a bad person.
Actress choice. But it's also not like. Sound bad. Fat enough where it's a big difference.
It's not real noticeable, though.
Oh,
it's not nearly as noticeable as his soul patch.
There is some facial hair in this movie, like Ashton Kutcher's goatee. When he's cool guy, frat guy.
He's got your beard in his first. First college incarnation.
Yeah.
He's got your beard.
Yeah.
Then when he becomes frat guy, he's got just the goatee.
Just the goatee, like just.
He's real Tony Stark. He's real Tony Stark in that.
Yeah. Very of the time too. So, journal's back, right? when we get there and Lenny stabs him and we go back. Oh, and Kaylee gets
right. Kaylee still gets hit with the board, but this time it like splits her whole cheek open.
And Kutcher wakes up and like it's kind of back to normal.
It's kind of back to basically back to normal. Oh, but Lenny's worse off. Well, Tommy's dead
for his life.
Right. Ashton Kutcher's back to normal, but he's made things worse for his friends.
Yeah. So, yes, Tommy's dead. Lenny is in a straight-up loony bin.
Just strapped to a bed in an empty room, but apparently totally lucid, because later he goes to talk to him, and he's just having full sense. He's not catatonic. He's just choosing to lay there quietly, I think.
Yeah. It makes no sense. But this is where you get Kayla. This was where my, like, 12, 13-year-old was like, oh, it's freaked me out. Was she is, you said it, a cliche prostitute crack
whore. But also, like, she looks like an Evil Dead hag. Like, dude, she's scary just, looking. She doesn't just look, like, dirty and scummy and a little and trashy. She's horrific looking. Like, the she's scar, like you wouldn't. It's not just the scar on her face. It's like the dark circles around her eyes.
No,
and
it's
the
not
way
the scar.
She talks and acts. It's all really horrific.
You wouldn't pay you wouldn't pay that. It is literally a $3 prostitute.
Yeah, like I cannot imagine. She says 50 and I was like, no way.
But he's like, I'll talk to you this. And then Ashton Kutcher somehow makes the scene even worse by what he tells her about to get her to be like, believe me, about the time travel.
Right, he's like, I know your life is shitty, but just know it could have been better until I fucked it all up.
And he's like, well, she's like tough. She's like, everyone knows, like, bubble. And she goes, but your toes curl when you come, you know, or whatever, like her so orgasm. And it's like,
what I'm saying. This movie, every chance this movie has to be like,
but,
like written by a 13-year-old.
But Ashton, I don't even think in the timeline that you had sex with her and you got to have sex with her that long enough to even, like, know that detail.
We haven't talked about how he gets all the memories. So he's probably got plenty of memories of having sex with
her. He keeps all the memories, and plus those, all the memories are, like, truncating his brain to
grow.
Right,
they're actually giving him brain damage, which is why his dad went insane.
And, like, his nose bleeding. One thing that does happen on this timeline, an old timeline, I should say, we never mentioned this, and it's really important. I just remembered the fact of this. His mom and him go to a psychic, and it's one of the worst scenes in a movie ever. She goes,
it's only in there because of the original ending. We haven't got to that yet, but like it exists to inform the original ending.
Yeah, there's two things.
But it is
in
a
here.
Horrible, terrible scene.
There's two things to inform the original ending. Do you want? I guess I'll save them. For the when we talk the ending.
I mean, yeah, if you want to wait and talk, I did want to. I don't know.
There's a lot. We're still going through it.
Because they go to the psychic, and the psychic basically tells him he has no lifeline. You should not. You have no soul.
And the mom's like, it's everyone. She's fucking around. Like, I don't know. And then the mom gives a. Also mentions that she's had two stillborns. Another wild thing when.
Because of the tone of this movie. I thought she was about to reveal that Ashton Kutcher survived an abortion attempt. I was so sure she was about to be like, I was scared and I almost got an abortion, but it didn't take and you survived. And that was going to be why he wasn't supposed to live.
So
you know?
There's probably something on a cutting room floor with that.
I was so sure that's where they were going. Because like, and it's a fucked up thought to have, but if this movie had me in that headspace where like, well, just whatever the most terrible thing in any given situation is, what this movie's going to do. That's just what I assumed was about to happen.
So those things get said, and this is in the director's cut. But I love in that scene with he's talking to his mom about like that, what you were going to say. But he goes, why didn't you ever tell me that? And I thought, what mother would be like, hey, 20-year-old son, 21-year-old son, guess what? I had some struggles.
I don't know. I mean, like I said, I don't know if I'm sure people do, and I don't get the impression a lot of women want to talk about their miscarriages.
No,
all the time.
I could tell you in a very, very seriously note. That is a conversation that you have in very certain settings, and not once, probably with your fucking son.
No.
Anyway.
Where are we at in the timeline? So
we're at Kaylee Crackhorn.
Okay.
Yeah, he's like, I'm gonna save, I'm gonna fix this, I'm gonna save you. And she just like witchly cackles to it.
She does cackle. Like, she is right. Like a witch. She is like a villain in a horror movie. Well, dude, she is so much like an Evil Dead hag. It's crazy.
My last note of the movie. I mean, we have more to talk about, but my last note that in my notes is, it's the opposite of It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh,
you know.
Save that, because I have a note on that too.
Yeah, okay. hold off
on that little bit, because I also have a note.
he journals back, and this is when we then go.
This is to the Blockbuster.
This is when we go to the Blockbuster, and we finally see what happens. And what happens is, I think we did get revealed at one point. They blew up a mother and her baby.
Oh yeah, we blew up a mother and her baby. We know
that. Hand, we talked about that. This is what he's. I'm gonna stop that event.
He's gonna stop it from happening. He's like gonna run up and stop her, shoo them away. When he runs up, Tommy is like, "Oh, fine," and he goes up and he actually like tackles the mom and baby to the ground. Yes. And Ashton Kutcher, Evan kind of stops and is like, "Huh?" And at that exact moment, he gets blown the fuck up. He stops for some reason in front of the mailbox. Like, I don't know, what was his plan?
To take the thing, like,
I thought his plan was to take the thing out of the mailbox and, like, throw it away or something.
Yeah, but he's also old enough, Ashton Kutcher, to realize this is a bad, let me stop the mother.
He should have done what Tommy did. Like, Tommy actually
immediately run out what Tommy did and just be like, no, not just standing for the
But it's like he's doing that and he gets to the mailbox and then Tommy runs past him and he kind of is like, huh?
Yeah.
And then he just gets like forgets about the bomb.
It's stupid. It's
incredibly stupid.
So then we wake up.
We wake up into an ableist nightmare where they treat a very real type of disability that I guarantee people who saw this movie have as the bottom barrel worst thing that could ever happen to you.
Yeah, so he's a double amputee.
He's a double amputee. And he's in a wheelchair, too. We don't really know. He has legs, but they apparently don't work.
And it's only funny because Ashton Kutcher's acting, like in how they handle it.
It's definitely like the the crassness of how it is handled, it makes it very funny.
Which is really, you know, it's also really fucked up in real life. That needs to be pointed out. Ashton Kutcher's brother his twin brother has cerebral palsy. And like wanted to be like, I think went to school to be like assigned, like some sort of like medical, he's a smart guy, like medical something to work with special needs. Very like, not an idiot when it comes to people with disabilities, and like it's part of his life. And like,
you think you would have a soft
you
touch.
You think this would be not in this movie? Just put
then
it
again,
like,
you would think he wouldn't write a rape apology letter.
So that's all said pre rape apology letter, but that's a real thing that you have to imagine. Like, that is as close. I mean, there's a difference between the disabilities.
Sure, but I mean, he's a person who's struggling to use his appendages, who's stuck in a trapped in a wheelchair. There are like things that types of disabilities that not only people in his life are going to deal with, but people who are going to watch his movie easily deal with. And he treats it like it's like the worst. I mean, that's like the end.
And
it's worse than when he's in prison. Worse than when Kaylee was a crack whore.
Well,
the worst thing is that he's a WMG and somebody's banging his girl.
Yeah, and he goes like Oh, and he's freaking out. And apparently he's a good dude. Like, that's the worst part of the story. Is like, everyone's like...
Seems like he was fine, and then he just turns into an asshole.
Yeah.
Like,
he tries to kill himself in the silliest way.
Yeah. I love that they make it. Like, dude, Tommy makes a joke about it immediately. He, like, doesn't take it seriously at all. That gives me the impression that this might not be the first failed suicide attempt, even. Like,
maybe, but...
They kind of brush it. He's pretty crap. He kind of brushes it off pretty callously.
But like, so like, Tom in this time, like, Tommy finds God, but like, also Tommy alludes that like, Evan's like, very supportive guy who's like giving them advice about fundraisers and this, and like, they allude he's not a bad dude. He's just this amputee. They also all go to the same college, which weird. But I get
also,
it.
Eldon Henson now looks like white Jesus. He's wearing
Eldon,
all white. He has like long flowing blonde hair.
Lenny
soul
is,
patch.
Lenny is banging his girl.
And Lenny's banging. And
He has the wildest speech with her. They like have the event, and then he like walks away, and he's like,
"Side quest," and has a little conversation.
He's just like, "So you're gonna, you're gonna fuck like, what, you ever think about me? What it could have been?" And I like I give Amy Smart credit here. Look on her face, like, "It was when we were like six, man."
Yeah, she like humors him because she can see he's clearly having a tough time that day. You're like, "This is my friend who's usually fine. He's clearly struggling with his disability today, so I'm fine to humor him and talk about this if it'll make him feel better."
Yeah,
like
I love this.
Clearly, like, not a thing she like has thought about very much. Like, she cares about her friend, but like,
and
obviously, well behind her.
Well, the other thing with that too is I think they allude to that like, because then after that conversation, she walks up to Eldon, to Lenny, and he's like, "Not yet." I think they allude to like, "Oh, we're like married. We're gonna get like some sort of like big life event."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Not yet," you know. But like, this, I get it. It's tough, but like, Ashton Kutcher, right? He goes through a lot of fucking events to get up to here already.
Yeah.
Probably should just stick with this. Like your life's bad because you don't have limbs, but like, you seem to be doing pretty well.
And you finally found that you flipped the script. Like, when your life was better, everybody else's life got worse.
Yeah.
Now you've taken that on. You have become Christ has risen, or whatever his name was supposed to be, and you have taken their sins on you. All their lives are improved, and you have like taken the brunt. You know, but eventually go one step further. So
but Evan is not a good person ever, so he doesn't do that. He freaks out. Does find one of his journals because he wasn't able to journal anymore.
No arms, he couldn't write more journals.
But he still had one. That one,
which is clearly the reason they came up with the double amputee idea, was to force him into that.
Get him back to Mel Station. Yeah. But this does.
Give him less save points to use.
This, you know, also brings up the point that no one's talked about. We haven't talked about it. None of my things. Not once did his mother go, "You black out. Let me see them journals." They're pretty free-willing around, and they have some fucked up shit in them.
Yeah, she never looked through them, I guess. She was very conscious of his privacy.
Bad, bad mother there.
That's right. That's what it is. Everybody's life is better, but his mom's. That's right. You think everybody's life is better, and everybody, and it's like, well,
why
he's going to kill himself because of that thing. Everybody's life is better, and I'll just get myself out of the equation. And then Tommy saves him, and they go up to visit his mom, and that's when you find out that the mom has cancer because she started smoking when he got his arm.
This is the biggest stretch too of cause and effect in the rules of the movie.
Yeah.
Cause not many things have been like this, like the one thing happened and these other things side. So also the funniest thing is when they go up there, they go, what is it? One pack. Like, it's not medical jargon. It's like,
day. 14 pack years, I think they said, or something.
Yeah,
isn't very long. 14 pack.
No, years. She would not have,
that would get stage 4 cancer. From
she that. Would not have stage 4 emphysema cancer, like all that, like everything. For her age and what she would have smoked in that like 7 years.
I mean, she would have had to have literally been like smoking like 3 packs a day.
Yeah, because they do little things early on where he like stops her from smoke, but it's never like, it's stupid. What I keep coming back to, it's stupid.
But he's already in this headspace where he's going to kill himself.
Yeah,
he's got one last chance to save everybody. So his mental health is
deteriorating. So where he's like, "I have a plan this time." He calls back to the Moth Station. And he goes, "I'm actually going to use the blockbuster on Eric Stoltz."
He's just going to threaten Eric Stoltz with it, I guess.
But he lights it. So he takes it. Like, but he hides it down there. He like runs over and he's like, he lights it. And you already blew up your limbs once. It's a really bad plan. Like, honestly,
that's the thing about this whole movie is like, and we talked about already, not only does he never think before, he never learns anything.
But where
he keeps making the same mistakes, he keeps making worse mistakes.
But where is his plan to literally just be like, because this is how this movie does work, "I'm going to chop his dick off."
Yeah. Yeah.
That would prove everything.
I don't know. Well, his whole thing was he's going to destroy the Blockbuster so that that prank can't ever happen and that part can't take place. That's his original thing. But when he goes to get it, Aerosol's like, hey, put that down. And then he kind of like uses it to threaten him. But he lights it because it's not a good threat unless you light him because, you know, it has to be lit to be scary.
So this all happens and there's kind of a back and forth. And it comes out of the hand.
It's dropped and it rolls away.
And young Amy Smart.
Little innocent Kaylee, 7-year-old.
Picks it up. Once again, she was old enough to do the prank eventually.
She's very young. A year or two younger than Evan. Although it seems like they're the same age as the rest of the movie. I don't know.
So does Tommy seem like the same age? Like,
I was gonna say, are Tommy and her twins? Are they all the same age?
Their college ages don't make any fucking sense. But she picks that shit up, and guess what?
And she goes, a sparkler!
A sparkler! Oh, there's some funny ass ADR in here. Like the baby hand. that might be the thumbnail, not the shitty poster.
The hand.
Just that baby hand. Blows up, kills her, and this is actually when I do like, it reminds me of like kind of the, when, so we wake up, he's in a mental, he's been institutionalized his whole life at this point.
Do we know what happens to anybody else in this timeline?
Do you remember anything with them?
Do you remember?
No. No, all we really get is, he runs to the movie.
I hope that maybe Tommy had a better life. Maybe his dad treated him better because he lost his daughter or whatever. I don't know.
Who the fuck
knows? But they don't ever say anything. You just find out he's basically been institutionalized his whole life. Now, I do like this. There's an element here. Unfortunately, I think they introduced it way too late. But like,
I think you're gonna say what I like though.
He's been the institution his whole life, and he wakes up, but you get the impression that he's been himself who did all this time traveling that whole time. So he's told his doctors all these stories before.
That's what I like. I like
so
that.
So there's
scene.
Like a total recall element to it, where his doctor is like, "This is just part of your illness. I've heard all this before. We know all this. Blah 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 blah."
You're not and a crap, like, bro.
They could have introduced that a lot earlier and given this movie another layer. Like that total recall isn't even really happening, or
identity,
like,
or like it's all that's fun. Like that
would have just I don't know. I was like, man, real missed opportunity.
Because I like the doctor too. Like the actor who's playing the doctor in that scene too. Like he's doing a good job, just being like, no, he's gone. Like this is because of this incident right now, nothing. He never wrote anything. There is no journal. There is nothing. But he's able to get one video, or at least this is, so I have all four endings we'll read out.
Okay.
We'll save the one we watched once again to the very last one. What people saw in the theaters was he escapes the mental institution.
Okay, you're gonna get to our ending. So he escapes.
He escapes the mental institution. For listening purposes, I didn't watch. I only watched our ending, but yeah, I have a write out of each one. So the theatrical release ending shows Evan. He escapes to all of these ones. He escapes out of the mental institution. I don't know how.
Well, he gets out of his room and he gets into the. He gets the doctor. Remember, he's talking to the doctor. And he steals his key, and then he gets back into the office. Right?
I forget it. I just know he gets out, and he's able to now see videotapes of time being, and this is how he gets back. But
oh yeah, there's like a video of like the day they moved in or something.
Yeah, he. You know what? We've already taken this time. So this is what we say. So after escaping the hospital staff and barricading himself in an office, Evan travels back one final time. You were right, via the use of an old home video, to the day Kaylee first met. He intentionally upsets her, so she and Tommy will choose
this
to live
with. This is the theatrical release I remember.
Yeah, this is theatrical. He says like, I'm gonna fucking kill you and your family if you don't. Yeah,
I hate you. Never come. Yeah. I don't ever want to see you again.
Like he like threatens her life once again
because she has told him that the only reason she stayed with her abusive dad was because of him. Even as a little kid, she was so enamored with him.
Such
she
a
stayed.
such a selfish character flaw, because maybe she was very into Lenny. I'm saying maybe she met another boy because of this timeline to make her want to stay. Like, it's loose. So, as a result, the not destructive upbringing, they don't grow up with Evan. Lenny is never bullied, and they all go on their happy, successful lives. Evan awakens in a college dorm where Lenny is his roommate. As a test, he asks where Kaylee is, to which Lenny responds, "Who's Kaylee?" Satisfied that his friends' futures are secure, Evan burns his journals and videos to avoid altering the timeline ever again. 8 years later, in New York City, Evan exists in an office building, or exits an office building and passes Kaylee on the street. Despite a brief look towards each other, they both keep walking. That's what everyone saw in the theaters.
Yeah, that I remember now, that. That's
so. So there's two more before our ending. The happy alternative ending is Evan and Kaylee stop on the sidewalk when they cross paths. They introduce themselves. Evan asks for coffee. The open-ended alternative ending is similar, but when they pass each other, Kaylee keeps walking, and Evan turns around and just starts following her.
What a fucking creep.
Before we get to, which is one of, I would say, number two on one of the craziest fucking endings of all time.
So wild. They tried to get this through.
These are like this move. My main question to this, even with our ending, is for a movie that's all like moral, you know, trying to be like have a point. What's its message? Because it's just bleak and shit. The message is if you don't
I don't know. I don't know that the answer to that. I was gonna say though, I do think the bleakest ending, the director's cut ending, is the one that fits the tone of the movie the best.
Yes, it does. So
the weird happy ending is like so out of character for this movie.
Apparently, the open ended one too was used in the novelization of the movie. So anyway, the director's cut ending, which is great. So he gets a video of his mother's birth, of his mother giving birth. Right. That's the.
Oh, that's how. Okay, that's the one.
I believe that. Sorry. Yeah, and sorry, momentarily.
And he's able to go back to the consistent with.
Yeah,
it's weird because he doesn't have a memory. He's
like watching a family video, which is
about it.
Yeah, so here we go.
Like, all the other ones he would have had some kind of core memory from that time. Evan, but not as a baby, you don't form those.
Yeah, with his brain terribly damaged and aware that he has committed a psychiatric faculty where he's loss of access to his time travel ability, Evan makes a desperate attempt to change the timeline by watching a family video which shows his mother just before she was about to give birth. Evan travels back to the moment and strangles himself in the womb with his umbilical cord.
You see this, by the way.
It's all seen. You can watch this on YouTube.
You see it. You see a little baby in a utero doing it. Then did you notice on the ultrasound, the baby is like pulling the cord on the ultrasound. They're putting an ultrasound. And it's like, the baby in the ultrasound is.
It's
so
God.
Fucked up. It's incredible. But I like, as he's dying, we also see that he's still getting memories somehow. So even though he would have no way of knowing any of this, he gets flashes of his mom getting married and remarried and having a baby. Kylie and Tommy going off to live with their mom and having a happy childhood.
Yeah.
Lenny living his life and just growing up to be a normal dude or whatever. Even though there's no way he would ever possibly know any of that.
No, it's yes, everyone has a great, and that's where it's like, is the message that if you don't exist, things are good.
Yeah, the message is the same message of the Married with Children season 4 Christmas episode, It's a Bundiful Life, where Al learns that his family would be better off if he had never been born.
Dude, it's a wild movie. It's one of the dumbest fuck. I think it's, for me, I think it's one of the worst movies we've ever talked about.
Like I said, I truly believe the core idea here is pretty cool.
Sure, it's a cool idea, but
the weird unexplained time travel powers. I like the cyclical nature, Terminator style, where it's like a closed loop. all that stuff works for me.
I what like
doesn't work is the era it was made in. That's the problem.
Yeah, yeah. Give a different cast. Give a different script. I like. And this is where I'm.
Is like an art house or like an indie movie, like a primer, where you just like everything's real kind of like simple and yeah, I don't know.
The movie is a perfect, so bad it's good movie for me. It's so interesting. Like the generally like, we always look forward to talking to each other. I had a shit day. I was looking forward to this because I was like, this movie. I mean, we talked for an hour and a half, and we probably could go for another half hour.
Oh yeah,
it's so fucking bonkers, and like it's like the Showgirls of psychological thrillers. It's like you want to go this way. Well, we decided to do it this way. Like.
It's a very, and it's like very of its era. It's one of those, like, it could, the way this movie was made and the actors that are in it and the choices that were in it could only have come out in like I said, between 1999 and 2007 is the only era this movie can get made.
Yeah.
In this way, like this can come out like this.
And that's what makes it. Like it's hard to say, but it's funny and it's fun. And it's one of those things where like, I hope How to Get Made covers it one day because it would be.
Like I said, I enjoyed it kind of like unironically, but I could still enjoy it in a different way now. Like I couldn't throw it away.
It's
such a weird little artifact and so many bizarre choices.
I will say this. The story that I'm shocked I didn't say is, and now I don't feel bad for doing this. When I was in. When it was douchebag, like 17, 18, whatever. AMC, we go to AMCs and they used to put like their favorite movie underneath their name. So it would be like Brian and like Alien or, you know, like whatever. Joe, Goodfellas or whatever. You pick. I'm sitting there, I'm getting popcorn. Girl's just doing her job. She's probably my age at the time or something. And it says the butterfly.
Loves movies because she works at the movie theater. Everybody works at the movie theater. Fucking loves movies.
It says the butterfly effect. And I just go, oh, butterfly effect? Really? Like the most piece of shit way. And I always felt, years later, I always felt bad about it, right? Like after, yeah. Like when I.
Yeah, sure. You're like, that's just unnecessarily rude. No.
Yes, it was rude to be rude. And I take that and I changed my opinion of feeling bad for that now after seeing this fucking movie and being like,
this movie shouldn't be your favorite movie.
This is what I'm going to project to the world. Yeah. We already used the Donnie Darko comparison. This isn't Donnie Darko where there's like poignancy to it. Like I truly mean like its message doesn't have a message. His message was the writers were like, this is going to be fucking sick.
Yeah. Its whole shit is like, it is rad.
isn't that tragic? Like the creators of this movie's favorite video game was Manhunt.
Or Max Payne.
Yeah. Probably more Max Payne. But it's just so like, yeah, I don't think I could take people seriously that would watch it in 2023 that was like not like how you and I talked about it. You're like there's
right,
good
if,
in here,
like
there's
if you tried to come at me like no this is legitimately a good thoughtful movie with things to say
that's what I mean
I could not take you seriously but if you're like this movie's bananas you should check it out I'd be like all right
yeah if someone came to me and was like yeah but like isn't it so sad what happens and I'd be like no because everything bad happens
yeah.
Like
this movie's a trauma dump. Like there's this movie bad thing that could ever happen to a person happens in this movie.
This movie doesn't give you any time to relax to actually make me feel bad for any of the people. And has nothing to do
well,
with...
Well, and there's a wild maniac at the center of this movie who's causing all this trauma and, like, and passing it off and changing who gets it. But, like, he's like a tornado and he's constantly swirling through these people's lives and making terrible, thoughtless decisions. So, like, what am I feeling even feeling bad for?
Let me drudge it. And it all starts from his first encounter, literally just being like, hey, let me see this girl who's doing pretty well. Like the worst thing right now in her life is that her job isn't like
that she's a Sarah Connor waitress. Yeah. She's just bad at her job.
And And you have the fucking nerve to be like, yeah, remember that time that it happened to me once that I know. Well, it probably happened to you every fucking weekend.
Yeah, you also, like, you show up in somebody's life after damn near 10 years. Somebody who was, like, traumatized with you and you were like, I'm going to come back for you and you never did. You maybe talk to them, like, a couple times and, like, feel out that situation. You don't even know that person. That much time has gone by. You don't know them anymore. You don't know what they're like or what they've been through or what they're willing to share with you. Like, you need to, like, calmly, like, walk your way in. This is, like, if you ever bring it up at all, it's not till, like, the third or fourth time you guys have hung out and you know the situation. Like, you know that you have a rapport where you can go back to this stuff. You don't just, hey, we're in the parking lot of where you work. We want to have a quick chat about how your dad probably raped you 1,000 times. No? Yeah, oh, you don't want to talk? Oh, did that upset you? I'm sorry. I'm so shocked. It's crazy.
And I guess our, what's the conclusion to this, or not, a thesis of this, is Ashton Kutcher, and that's who it is. It's Ashton Kutcher. It's not Evan. Never learns from that first fucking mistake of bringing shit up too abruptly and quickly.
Right. He could have learned a lesson of, like, let sleeping dogs lie right there.
Yeah. Like, okay, you change it once. And like I said, the first time, not a bad, like, yeah, maybe, you know.
In prison, though.
Yeah, because he murdered, but it's just a shitty fucking movie. And also the movie, it's weird too that the movie is like, you're actually just watching the story of Jesus Christ. I mean, he gives himself the freaking,
what's that called? He finally does the stigmata. I was thinking, you know, more than that.
That's the biggest plot hole, bud. That's the biggest plot hole.
Yeah,
The fact that
had to have happened at the same time as the picture, but it didn't. They never talk about it.
But he also doesn't journal about, like, the hand thing. He doesn't. The teacher still has the same reaction of the drawings, but not him piercing his hands.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, when it happened, that's the fault. The fault of that. This is actually the point I wanted to bring up. The fault, the real lapse of the rules of the time travel. Like I said, you and I both agree. We don't like when things really over-explain.
Yeah, I don't mind.
Is they abandoned it in that scene.
Yeah.
Because he's able to do that, then come right back. The scene needs him to do that and come right back and see, look.
Weird. It's like, it doesn't, I think that the time travel in the rest of the movie is sloppy enough that even though I think that's the worst of it, I don't think it's so egregious by comparison that I'm like, it all kind of fits as far as I'm, that's fine. I do think that's weird, but I guess, I don't know. He does different things each time he goes back, so we never really know what happens during those original blackouts from the first part of the movie. We don't know, so maybe he never did the hand thing. That's something that comes later. I don't know. But the last thing I wanted to say before we wrap up is the type of story this was reminding me of, and it might just be because I was rewatching the last couple seasons of What We Do in the Shadows, and they have but it's like a genie or a monkey's paw situation where every time he, like, makes a wish or goes back and tries to fix something, he fucks it up worse, and he doesn't, you know what I mean? It's like, he doesn't think his wishes through well enough, and he ends up getting fucked up.
It's a better monkey paw story than a, you know, and once again,
honestly, it's like edgier Bedazzled, right? Where, like, he's kind of like trying to change his life for the better and accidentally fucking it up worse. And, like, that's kind of what this movie is.
Yeah. And they're like, in Bedazzled, there's like some timelines that are pretty good for you.
I'd always gone with the superstar, guy, the
basketball player,
guy with the little dick.
That's yeah.
Fine. He'd be fine.
I'm sure he was doing fine in that. Yeah. It's a movie.
It's quite a movie.
And its
choices were made.
It's still the most baffling thing that in 2004 Ashton Kutcher was on this, and like people definitely rented this fucking movie, watched this movie. Like, we're gonna watch this like fun, like thrillery thing, you know? Because like, let's say, like, with Ashton Kutcher, and then they watch this shit. Like, it's not, like,
I love the idea that fans of that 70s show and Dude, Where's My Car, yes, were like, let's go see the new Ashton Kutcher movie, and like, it's like 30% child molestation.
And yes, it's imagine going on a date and be like, we're gonna watch this fucking thriller. It's a good thriller. Like Ashton Kutcher's trying something serious.
Starts off Eric Stoltz videotaping some shirtless kids. Like that's the very beginning.
Because it ain't. It's not. It's not like the same year Texas Chainsaw remake comes out, right? Like Jessica Biel.
It's right around that time, though. I think 2003 is.
No, it's same. It's same year, I think.
Yeah.
I'm getting out of here. That I know me, like, we're going on a date. I'm taking him to a slasher horror movie that's starring a popular, you know, teen actress, TV. So just, I can't get over how. I'm glad the movie exists, put it that way, because it's so bananas. I'd rather something be bananas than being like, but. Yeah, Edgelord. I think your tweet nailed it. It's just the Edgelord movie.
Well, yeah, like I said, there's a cool, interesting idea at the core of this movie, but unfortunately, there's so much 2004 and like edgy, new metal kind of vibes.
The soundtrack
spread all over this thing.
Doesn't The Reason by at one point play?
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Hoobastank.
So surprised that this doesn't end with like a Linkin Park song over the credits.
For the sake of story, for the sake of the movie and the story, the director's cut is the superior version. It's not saying it's a good movie, but it has
it fits better for the nasty kind of mean-spirited tone of the movie.
For 2004 and being a movie studio and being New Line Cinema, what people saw in the theater fits better.
Well, yeah, you want Amy Smart and Ashton Kutcher to have a happy ending.
Because actually, I'm going to keep talking. I think, well, they don't have a happy, they have happier endings. This movie never has a fucking, the happy ending is the one they choose of them getting coffee together.
I think the happy ending is just them living their lives and everybody ended up.
No, but you gotta think about how, like, dummies think.
You're
like,
talking about Hollywood happy ending where they get together.
Yes, Hollywood happy. Because another movie that does something like this, not as nowhere near as big as.
Even in that timeline, happy ending, they get together, Ashton Kutcher still has all those molestation memories. Yeah. That should happen to him.
Yeah.
Like.
And, like, I mean, like, there's, like, Nicolas Cage is, like, the family man, right? Like, they meet up and then they just, like, fucking sit down for coffee at the airport and it ends with them, you know, never living the life you watch. Like these wonderful, these glimpses, things never do end.
Sliding doors.
Yeah. But they made the right call. Although if this was a movie today, it's the same thing. You know why you keep the fucking abortion ending? Not abortion. Yeah.
Miscarriage ending. Self-abortion, I guess, technically.
Yeah. Because that shit would go so viral on like Twitter and TikTok.
That'd be a Megan type thing.
People would be going to see that shit. Just be like, I heard this has a thing.
Yeah. And this would get the barbarian treatment of don't read anything about this. Just go in blind.
But in 2004, I would like to know you would know more than me because you were a bit older. I think the word would probably was more of, it made almost $100 million. I mean,
I was going to say, no, as I remember, this movie did very well.
$78 million is a hit.
I was probably like one of the people who thought this was a good movie.
Oh, 97. We started this episode saying people still to this day, oh, it's a good movie. And I bet you it's because it was like, nah, man, crazy fucking stuff happens. It's the same way how when we used to do Flyover and we watched Running Scared with the same kid and it was like, that's crazy movie.
Yeah. But it was also just a movie where stuff happened that didn't make any fucking sense.
That also included kiddie porn.
Of course. Yeah, what was the deal? Again, early 2000s was real, like, so obsessed with, like, the edginess and, like, sex tapes and snuff films and, like, you know, Seven. Again, Seven's in this movie and that, like, that's kind of got that same vibe to it, too. Of course, David Fincher does it so well, like, nobody's going to take
that. Seven's a good movie?
Oh, right. That's the thing. Play with it as a stylistic choice as long as the movie holds up.
That's the wild. Seven's only in there because, you know, fucking New Line Cinema was like, yeah, no, you guys could use that. We have some posters lying around. Oh, you guys could use it. Anyway, we can keep rambling about this fucking wild thing.
Yeah, let's wrap it up, baby.
Yeah. So yeah, my final thoughts: it's fucking wild. This is for 100% a beer movie.
Yeah, like I honestly would still be like, yeah, if you've watched this and you're curious, I would say watch it. It's wild. It's a wild ride. I don't know if I would recommend it to everybody because it is kind of triggering. It's just got a lot of fucked up shit in it, and a lot of people just don't like to watch that stuff.
Oh, I could. I recommend it to the people I know that ironic. I literally text people today that like it ironically.
Yeah.
Should I like so bad it's good? I texted them. I said, this movie's fucking just trauma.
Yeah, but just like if a normie on the street was like, ooh, Butterfly Effect, I don't think.
I'd be like, don't revisit it. Keep the memory you have of you thinking it's
right, good. Right, that's what I would say. I'd be like, if you remember it as being good, just don't go back.
We'll leave it at. This is why I compare it to the Boondock Saints comparison. It's like, some things are just meant to be left in the past when.
And I think I will say, much like because I said earlier, I do feel like I fall kind of in the same place where it's like, it's not good, but it was definitely not as bad as I was expecting it to be, kind of. I was really like,
oh, no, wait.
Well, you know what? You're right. This one's much worse. Boondock Saints wasn't as bad as I was expecting.
No.
I went back to Boondock Saints, I was expecting to really be embarrassed. It was only like, it was
no,
fine.
No, I also think this movie
is much worse.
This is much worse, and it has some really bad acting in it.
Yeah.
That's one thing we didn't talk about.
Uncharacteristically bad acting from Amy Smart, who's usually pretty good. She has some pretty rough moments.
Her upsetness that they didn't give her anywhere to walk to go off to when he gives her the information when he brings it up is unintentionally hysterical because she just walks off to nowhere.
Stick to the middle of nowhere.
Like they should have had that conversation like in her kitchen or something.
Or
like
near her car.
There's also like there's a few scenes that like. With Amy Smart in particular, that like their Ashton Kutcher's real revelation when he's an amputee is really he's really bad at so Ashton Kutcher I think good in rom coms like Guess Who.
Well, I just think he's a wheelhouse. He's a comedy guy.
He's charismatic.
He's how to deliver comedy dialogue.
Piece of shit. Charismatic piece of shit. The man cannot emote any sort of drama or empathy.
Yeah, there's a couple times. Obviously, this movie's got a lot of emotional shit in it, and there's definitely some times where he's trying to, like, I don't know, emote, and they're doing, like, a single tear on his cheek, and none of it really lands.
All right, I know we were going to end real quick, but I'm going to put an actor in here who I think is, like, the most charismatic, but has, like, good range, and probably a similar age, honestly, maybe a little older than Ashton Kutcher, so. I think you make this movie, I mean, it'd be so out of character for him, but same thing with Ashton Kutcher. You make this movie with, like, a Paul Rudd?
Oh, yeah. And this would only been, let's see, this would have been, like, 6 or 7 years after Clueless, but he's still...
He'd probably the same age.
I'll say this is 2004, so we're, like, 3 or 4 years away from 40-year-old Virgin, so he's definitely playing early 20s here, no problem.
You put him in the role at that... It probably hits hard, and we're not laughing about this. This is. Have you ever viewed recently? I know I'm just keep comparing it to movies. The Number 23 with Jim Carrey.
Oh man, that's a bad one. Oh boy.
This is Number
23. This is definitely like Number 23 being like right in the wheelhouse of this.
These are the same kind of.
No one really. The trailer for that one and being excited, and then seeing the movie and be like, oh no.
No one really decided to like. Figure it out. They just had a cool idea and they rolled with it and they said, you know what's gonna be fucking cool? Edgelord.
Right. All right. Jim Carrey. Nobody will ever see that Jim Carrey in this type of
role. We're gonna give a grown adult the emo comb over. But yeah, it's a fucking dumb movie. But yeah, like you said, I recommend it for a so bad it's good watch. But if you had
ironic watching, it's perfect.
If you enjoyed the movie as growing up and you like it, don't watch it or you
also like... I'm not here to judge. If you like this movie, just don't make it your favorite movie. Like if this is your favorite movie, watch more movies because there's stuff like this that's better than this.
Yes. All right, you know where you guys can find us. right.
At Hercules, Chendango 1. Twitter, Blue Sky.
Yeah. All right. Stay frightful, everyone. Bye.
Welcome to Flyover State of Fear.